The Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129 presents America This Week, a smart Catholic take on faith and culture with Father Matt Malone and Carrie Weber.
Good day. You're listening to America This Week, a smart Catholic take on faith and culture. I am executive editor for America Magazine, Carrie Weber, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Zach Davis.
Good to be with you, Carrie.
Sitting in for Father Matt Malone and Jim Keane, one of our senior editors.
Good to be with you both.
And we're offering you the news at the intersection of the church and the world gathered by our team at America Magazine. He has written a great article for us, which you can find at americamagazine.org, called Men Are Struggling with Their Spirituality. Can the Catholic Church Help? Father Jim McDermott, welcome to the show. I wonder if you could tell us a bit about sort of the general thesis of this piece.
Yeah, sure. So basically the idea was, you know, in light of things that have been going on both in church and society in the last couple of years, to take a look at, you know, how is the church sort of working with men? What kind of messages is it sending? What kind of things is it offering or opportunities to kind of grow in your spiritual life, to think about your relationships with your family and others? And then basically the article, what it does is it goes through like five different sort of people or approaches that are used, from like self-help books to different kinds of retreats that are offered, to a theologian at Boston College just kind of talking about, so what does virtuous masculinity look like? So five different sort of approaches to masculinity.
Yeah, so is there an answer to that? Is there a definition of virtuous masculinity that's sort of church approved?
Well, it's funny, like, so I think that although each of those five sort of groups comes, they approach things in different ways. I would say that one sort of theme that kind of comes out, sort of talking to Richard Rohr and sort of the work that he does, or talking to Meg Guider, this theologian at Boston College, is sort of like a masculinity that's based on tenderness and friendship. That actually, like, one thing, if you talk to men, if you start kind of from where they are and sort of the friendships that they have, that there are these sort of virtues that can be drawn from it, as sort of in contrast to, like, what you see in a lot of self-help books is more like, it sort of starts with, men, we got to get our act together because we're pretty screwed up, which sounds okay. You know, start from a position of your weakness, but then usually leads right into, we got to stop acting like women, you know, or sort of like effeminate men. Like, there's all this sort of other stuff that's mixed in that's very problematic. So it might be well-intentioned, but at the end you're like, wow, I feel like I need a shower, because it seems like we just really put down women in order to teach men how to be, like, very strange sort of old-fashioned notions of masculinity. Whereas something like Richard Rohr is doing, or that Meg Guider's talking about, is much more about, like, okay, we can talk about our flaws, we should, and our sort of our issues, but also about, like, friendship, about companionship, about the ways that we walk together in a more positive, I don't know, sort of holy way, I would say.
Now, backing up a little bit, sort of the premise of the question, does everybody agree that there is, like, a crisis in male spirituality? I think you can open up any newspaper and see all the different ways that men are ruining the world, but specifically in religion, is there a crisis among all these people that you talk to?
No, I would say absolutely not. So, like, I talked to Pat McCorkle, runs a men's retreat center in Demontreville, Minnesota. He's been running it. It's been going for about 100 years. He's run it for about 10 or 15. And this place is very old school. It's they do preached retreats only for men every weekend, 50 or 48 weekends a year. They get 70 men every weekend. I was just there doing one of these retreats about a month ago. And I don't think he would say, or Paul Lichtag, who works with him, I didn't hear them say anything like there's a crisis. It's more like we're trying to provide a service, we're trying to provide a place where men can come and have retreats. I think Richard Rohr, it's interesting, I don't want to put words in his mouth. I think he would say, from the conversation I had with him and the stuff that's in the article, in general there's issues with men that are not sort of historical. It's just, you know, his work is a lot in sort of the initiation rites that, you know, over centuries and millennia that different communities have developed to help men kind of deal with issues of fear and a desire for control, which sort of stems out of that fear. And so if there's a, I think he might say, again, I'm reluctant to put words in his mouth, but I think he might say there's always a crisis for men and for women too. Like, there's just the crisis of being human and sort of the issues that we all face and have to deal with as Christians, as human beings.
And Jim,
would definitely.
Would you say that Richard Rohr like links this to, I mean, you talked a little bit in the article about liturgy and how it appeals to men versus women. Do you think that he would say that we need different images or aspects of the liturgy to change, or?
He certainly was pretty critical of the way that liturgy is presented in terms of its ability to speak to men. I mean, that he would say that things like, quote unquote, the smells and bells, lots of incense, lots of men in the, sort of the vestments that priests wear, lots of talking, not a lot of silence, that those are sorts of, in his experience of, you know, decades now of working with men, that those sorts of practices don't very easily translate, that they tend to make the men more easily are more likely to get distracted by that, bored by that, or, and actually this is something Meg Guider talks about, that they just can't relate. That Meg Guider has this very interesting idea, you know, for, we'll talk about priests as sort of being virtuous, as sort of a model for men, but her argument was actually that sort of notion, if you do think of them as virtuous, it actually makes them less relatable because you feel like you could never be like that. They somehow have some very special relationship with God and this sort of unique life, and I don't. And so you end up feeling less than and sort of further disconnected in the context of a liturgy.
I found a lot of that just absolutely bonkers, kind of, if I'm honest. Mm. In the one sense, I think there is, like, I don't know, I have this image in my head, and, you know, any small town America parish, like one where I grew up in, you kind of have this sense that it's mom bringing the kids to mass and dad is at home watching football.
Right.
And I think that's probably true in a lot of instances, but not universally. But I don't really get the idea that men can't connect to the liturgy because of the way it's. I don't understand. He's just saying, like,
well,
if they were more.
You're saying, because you do connect to the liturgy.
Yeah,
right?
Totally. Like all the bells and the smells and the stuff and the rituals, and I don't know. I find a lot of room for silence, and I don't know that. Is he just like the sense that if we added like strategy and winning and losing or something into the liturgy, that men would be more engaged?
Well, I would say definitely not that. As sort of Rohr's general approach is that that's the stuff we have to challenge in men, is this mm-hmm. sort of notion of winning and losing. But I think his idea is that it sounds like it just doesn't relate well to you, and I'm sure that there are other men as well. Actually, one of the things I found at times in writing the article is that when people started to say about like men in a general sense, I always found myself a little anxious.
Yeah,
right.
I've been on the other side of that many times, and I think most men at some point have, that whatever the generalization is, and Rohr's would be very different, say, than most sort of Christian self-help books, but still there's a time where you go, oh, I don't know. Why do we have to say all men? Why can't we be more hesitant about that?
Well, I guess there seems to be this like fundamental divide where men aren't connecting to something, and there seems to be a question of whether you need to reform the men so that they can connect, or reform the thing that they're not connecting to fit the needs of men. And one of those seems more problematic than the other to me.
Yeah, and I guess I'm reluctant. Certainly some of the article, there are people talking about in terms of quote-unquote reforming men, but I think for me anyway, the thing that was most helpful or liberating is maybe Tom McGrath or some of the other people in the article saying, Tom McGrath, who's someone that's done Richard Rohr's retreats and has worked for Loyola Press for a long time, it's more like helping men, as anybody, get in touch with their sort of deeper struggles and life issues and know that it's okay. Like, know that it's okay to be a mess. Mm-hmm. Know that it's okay to be angry. Like, that was something that I thought was really interesting. A couple people talked about how, like, you know, as much as you would say in the wake of, say, Me Too or things going on in the church, the last thing men need to do, they got to get their act together. In some ways, some of the people I spoke to were saying, yeah, that's true, but part of the problem in the church is you're kind of taught you don't get to sort of have your feelings. Like, if you're angry, you better shut that down, and that leads to all kinds of other problems. So is there a safe space, so to speak, or way, whether it's faith-sharing groups, retreats, or whatever, where men can sort of like, it's okay to not have your act together here and to face the fact that in
Father
truth,
McDermott, I was wondering, I mean, you're doing your ministry in Los Angeles. It's a very ethnically diverse place. Does this get broken down in different ways according to different groups? I mean, you have a huge Latino population, a Vietnamese population, a Filipino population, all these different groups in Los Angeles. Is men's relationship to the Mass or to their spirituality different with those groups?
It's not something we talk about in the article, but I'd say for sure, yeah. I mean, the cultural different definitions of masculinity can't help but play roles. Yeah, absolutely.
There's I think one of the beautiful things is that ideally the church can offer, you know, a way in for all different types of men who would approach their spirituality differently, whether that's for cultural reasons or just personal or emotional or their own way in which they were brought up. And you talk about a couple of the different ways. One of them was this silent retreat. Another thing that you mentioned briefly is sort of these outings where the men would go axe throwing or play wiffle ball. What role does that have in this process?
Yeah, that's Brother Andrew Hennessy. He's a Franciscan friar in Indiana. He's pretty new, I think, to the Franciscans, and he was working with young adults in southern Indiana, I think, and he was just noticing that there didn't seem to be, he'd noticed that the kinds of things that parishes often offer to men are sort of, this is my word, not his, but kind of self-serving, or it's sort of like, come to our parish and do what we want, men, so that it'll be good for you, but it also means you're coming back to church. And his approach, his thought was, no, I don't think that's how that'll work. And he was seeing it fail. So he thought, what if we try some sort of unusual things that guys might like to do? That starts as being about sort of camaraderie and companionship. So one thing which got my attention was axe throwing, which is apparently a thing. I thought it was just a thing where he was, but no, it's on like the Good Fight now. This is a thing that's going on where people go sort of like a gun range, but instead of shooting, you throw axes. And then there's like a pizza party that follows. Yeah.
We've got them in Brooklyn now, too.
I believe you've been axe throwing,
I've been
Zach?
A few times, yes.
Yeah.
Really? And what's that like?
Oh, it's so fun. I go with both my male and female friends. But... You show up, someone teaches you how to throw an axe, and it feels wildly unsafe, but you sign a waiver. There's often a bar also in these establishments.
Serving mead, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a very dangerous combination.
Yep, totally. But, gaining steam and popularity, I would say.
Right. It's fascinating. Go ahead, please.
No, go. I was just going to say, he has found that maybe if you invite someone to throw axes, they're actually less intimidated, however dangerous it might be, than if you invite someone to go to church.
Well, what he found, like another thing that he's done is like a wiffle ball tournament. And what he's found is if you bring a group of guys together to do something that is seemingly not religious, that it makes them more comfortable just being able to have real conversation and do religious things. So, I mean, this is what turned my head. What he did is he had this axe throwing thing. They had like a pizza party. I'm sure there might have been meat involved. But they ended with adoration. They went back to the parish and did adoration. And I was like on the outside saying, "What are you talking about?" But he said, "No, it sounds crazy, but it actually tracks that by the time you get to the religious component, they feel comfortable with each other, and so then it's more meaningful than if you were like just come for adoration or." Yeah, or something like that. And I think the wiffle ball thing was similar, that you just bring a group of people together, have a fun time, and end with some sort of experience of prayer.
Right. There seems to be a kind of a theme of silence being something that is appealing to a lot of the men that people are reaching out to. And there's this, like the retreats where there's a lot of space for yourself. Did you find that to be something that was kind of a useful offering when you were talking to people, that they thought men might be sort of averse to kind of a more religiously social theme type event?
I don't think I would have known going in. I would have had the guess that silence would be sort of generally thought to be more appealing for men.
I was sort of surprised by that.
Yeah, but it did sort of like this men's retreat that I was helping on in Demontreville, Minnesota. So that's near the Twin Cities. Just a month ago, that place is referred to and quoted extensively in this article. It's all silent. They come to talks. It's a lot of talks, but otherwise, and the directors there are very sort of like, you will do this. It's sort of like being in high school again. Like, this is how we do it, and we're going to watch you. But you know, I interviewed somebody for the article that had gone on this retreat, and then talking to people even a month ago, they just love it. They were just sort of like, they basked in the silence in a way that I found unexpected. Especially since it's not really a normal part. Our lives are so busy, it would seem harder, more and more difficult, in fact, to be ready or willing to have that kind of silence in your life. But it was something, note how strong it was.
Yeah, Father Jim, one thing that you mentioned that strikes me is that when I was back in Los Angeles, I did some work with people who did Curcio retreats, and it was all men, and it was exactly as you described, is that there was no variance from the script at all. It was very much, this is how we're going to do it, this is what you're going to experience.
So no improvisation?
No, none at all. But the men really did seem to enjoy that. Like, it gave them a space to kind of, you know, open up a little bit and be a little bit more emotional with each other and share a little bit more.
Yeah, it's very interesting. In fact, in Demontreville, I thought the structure is intimidating. I would find it hard because it is very like it's set, but they would say, and actually the director there, Pat McCorkle, says them knowing ahead of time, because these guys will come back year after year, that sort of structure is super important because it means that they can shift. They know exactly,
right.
And this really does speak to the other article you were talking about. They know right what they're getting from the start, and so they don't have to worry about it. It's just like, I can just settle in. It's going to be the same as last year, just with a different speaker, and it's helpful to them.
Right.
Father Jim, you are a Jesuit priest, meaning you have spent a lot of time in formation with women too, but a lot of it with only men. Have you gotten any insights from your training as a Jesuit into male spirituality?
Gosh, that's a good question. I mean, it's funny. I've never really. It's true that my formation, or a good part of it, the early part of it, it was all with men. But you know, in theology, which is the most recent, it would have been. I think there were probably half my classmates were women and do amazing work in the church. I don't know. No, see, yeah, actually, I would be reluctant to say. If anything, I think what I've gained in information in a male religious community is more an understanding that people are pretty different. Like I would say there are as many differences as similarities, actually, in what men, what Jesuits sort of, what works. Or I will say, like, but this is for me, like I have found personally, and it seems like at least some of my peers have found, that faith sharing, which is like small group conversations, whether it's over dinner or just like sort of set aside time, like once a month or once every couple months, where people can really just talk honestly about what's going on with them. That's been pretty consistently. I'd say that many Jesuits have found, at least younger guys, have found that that's a very valuable thing. But beyond that, I don't know. Maybe I'm too close to it to see what the patterns are.
Well, I think there, you know, it doesn't have to be a single answer either, because I think that's, you know, that's the beauty of the church, is that, I mean, even among religious, you can join the Dominicans, you can join the Franciscans, you can join the Jesuits, you can join, you know, any number of religious orders. So even if you like decide on one way of living the church, you have another sort of branch of options that open up to you. And I think that it makes sense that the church could accommodate and without too much tension, you know, both adoration and axe throwing and silent retreats and small faith sharing groups. It's kind of a lovely thing about it. And I think we probably do more harm than good when we try to say, like, here is the one way that all men should be formed so that X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
Because there isn't a single way that is going to be perfect for everybody as long as that way leads back to Christ. It's a good way.
Yeah, I
no,
think...
I like that. I love that.
Jim, when you were talking about sort of being too close to it, or you sort of being... to glean, I don't know, an outside perspective from it, or in from shifting from like early part of your formation being with men and then shifting to sort of being half and half men and women. One of the things that I think about, one of the fundamental experiences that have taught me how to be a man are the times where I've been with women exclusively and in the minority. So for example, on this podcast that I host called Jesuitical, we do exactly the type of faith sharing that you're talking about every week. Mm-hmm. And
sort of
being in a space where I'm actually the only man and I'm with two women, I have to learn a lot of things about, it's just common in American life because of a lot of things that have gone wrong, that men are often just sitting around in circles of power by themselves. And sort of I think that's sort of the next step in male spirituality and getting men to understand themselves is to put them in spaces, in healthy spaces with women.
Hmm. No, I'm absolutely with you on that. Absolutely with you on that. I know some Jesuits that they do faith sharing groups where it's not just Jesuits, it's with other people, and some of them are women and some are men. And I think those can be really powerful experiences. Can I just say, I was just one other thing, you know, I'm just kind of twigging on that question of, in terms of Jesuits and sort of a male religious community, I'll tell you one thing. I'm almost 50. I live in a community of about 30 guys that range in age from late 30s to, you know, mid 80s. And one thing I'm finding as I'm getting older is, and I see it in others, is I think as you get older as a man, or maybe just as a human being, there's a tendency to get more, I don't know, more hard in your heart a little bit, like a little more protected, and which can be like sort of the get out kids, those damn kids need to get off my lawn kind of a thing, where you're just sort of, you're sort of cynical and it's kind of amusing as a pose, but as a lifestyle, it becomes pretty dangerous. And one thing that I'm finding I have to really work on is how do I keep my heart tender and vulnerable, lest I just become kind of a snarky old man.
That's not just Priest Jim. I'm doing it too.
That was exactly something I was thinking about, though, is there's such a, I think, difference in age and generations and how different generations of men grow up to be men, that's a huge challenge for the church to think about how to minister to these groups distinctly. And one of the great things that I have in my parish is that there's not just a men's group, there are two men's groups. And there's one for guys that are just out of college and are starting families and careers, and then they sort of quote-unquote graduate into an older men's group. And I think that's part of what's made it so successful is giving guys those age-specific ministries as well.
So is it broken up literally by age, or is it sort of like life experience? Like
it's age, but there's some flexibility, obviously. Yeah. So there's like 22 to 39 and then and then older.
Kind of a traditional.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Zach, have you? What has been the biggest blessing that's come from you being part of your men's group?
I walk away every week thinking about how rare that experience is of there being, you know, 15 guys in Brooklyn, young guys, sitting down and talking about their feelings and their faith. It's just not, those aren't spaces that we create and cultivate for men a lot of the times. The colloquial terms we use, like locker rooms, you know, locker room talk is what comes out of locker rooms, mm-hmm. and you know, back rooms and bars and pool halls and things like, these are like sort of the ideas we have of traditional male social spaces. And I think about a lot of the toxicness that has come out of that. And I walk away every week grateful just having that space created.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you. Father Jim McDermott, we have about 30 seconds left, but what's the one thing you would hope men might take away from your article in terms of what direction they might head in their spirituality?
I think, you know, the article has a lot of different voices and approaches, and I guess I hope that they would get, like I did, because I, going into this, didn't know much about this topic. I hope that they would find some voice or way that sort of feels like they recognize or that might might speak to them.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for being on the show. We really appreciate it. As always, Father Jim McDermott, our Los Angeles
pleasure.
Correspondent. You can learn more at americamagazine.org. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, all the social media, etc. For Jim Keen and Zach Davis and myself, have a great day.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.